Welcome to a special podcast edition of the Pastoral Resources Program of the Eastern American Diocese, sponsored by the Fund for Assistance to Rokeword. Today's podcast is a lecture by Archpriest Nikolai Artyomov on the life and legacy of Metropolitan Anthony Chrapavitsky. This lecture was recorded on October 19, 2016, at a diocesan clergy retreat in St. Mary of Egypt Church in Atlanta, Georgia.
Eminences and excellence, dear fathers and sisters, mothers, I acknowledge that my weakness, I know that my English is not perfect, and I learned it in school in Germany, and I didn't speak English for a long time, more or less now. Therefore, if I need some words, I'll ask them in Russian and you will help me to translate. Metropolitan Anthony was born as Alexei in an intellectual family where he had three brothers. He was the third of four brothers. And all the other three and the father were working in civil authorities. So he was, from the beginning, rooted in the civilian Russian society. He was born in Vatagino, which is in the Novgorod region. And his mother, who was very religious and left him deep impressions of religion. His mother died after the revolution in the same village, Vatagino, when Alyosha was traveling in the south of Russia. Novgorod is a very special city, as you know, because there Rurik came, and the roots of Russia are there. But because I am from the German diocese, I must say that Novgorod also was a Hansestadt. It was linked to Germany, to Hamburg and Lübeck. So these are the links, and I mention it because Vladyka Antoni made a great impression on the Germans, especially when he was down there in the Ukraine. And this had a tremendous effect for our church, because he spoke German fluently, and the Germans remembered, well, this Metropolitan in 1918... was all right. So the German diocese stemmed from this impression of the German authorities. But this was just another point. Novgorod as a church city with beautiful churches and beautiful services attracted the heart of Metropolitan, not yet Metropolitan, of course, but this child, Alexei, who was ministering and saw bishops serving. He started reading. His grandfather was a Voltairean and had a big library. So this little boy started reading deep books, and fathers, church fathers, the lives of the saints. He was very, very impressed by that. And he asked questions. Why don't we in Russia have a patriarch? The other Orthodox churches have patriarchs. Where is the patriarch? And those answers which he got received from the adults were not quite satisfying him. So this question of patriarch impressed him, and he stayed with it. And the other decision which he took in himself at about 7 years, that he will become a monk, and he stick to it all life long. But when he was 7 years old, they moved to St. Petersburg, where he wanted to enter the seminary. And he insisted for the parents, "I want to go to the seminary," which was in the structure of Russia in those times, a school for children of priests, and maybe not a very high level. Therefore, which is said by Vladyka Nikon Rutlitsky, who wrote about his life, about the life of Metropolitan Antony, he says that this was a wound, the first wound concerning his religion, concerning his dynamics, his internal dynamics. Well, therefore, he went to normal school, and he was in the high school, gymnasia, which he finished. And then he immediately inscribed in the St. Petersburg Academy, Spiritual Academy, как духовная академия, Spiritual Academy, Theological, thank you, Theological Academy, from 1881 to 1885. At the end of the fourth course, he became a monk. And then wrote his thesis. But before that, he was an instructor, and he was teaching in somewhere else in the south, west, Holm. It's now Poland. Holmskaya Duchovnaya Seminaria. But he returned after a few years, as he became a rector of the St. Petersburg Seminary. Soon after that, he changed. He became a rector of the Moscow Theological Academy. Everything was all right. He was open-minded, and he saw the weaknesses of the system. The scholastic influence which came from Ukraine with Pyotr Mogila, with his non-orthodox theological thoughts, and the whole structure and the way of teaching it was not his. Therefore, he opened his doors for the students, and they had tea together, and they joked together, and they talked, had deep talks. So some of them, when they wrote their memoirs, some of them said, "Well, sometimes when I read a thesis or a book from one of our former students, I thought, I heard this new thought before. When I thought about that, I remembered that when we were drinking tea together, we were talking about this idea." Metropolitan Antony, as a rector, Archimandrit, he just... Is this juggling? He was juggling with different ideas and threw the balls to the students, and everything was very lively. Even Patriarch Tikhon, when he was elected, immediately after his election, I will speak about this later, immediately after his election, remembered those drinking of teas and being together, having this atmosphere of Orthodox Church thinking. Therefore, Archimandrit Kyprian Kern, who knew Vladyka Antony in Belgrade, and later was a teacher in Saint-Serge in Paris, he says, if some critic would ask me to characterize Vladyka Antoni, a critic who has no time, just give me one word to characterize this person. He said, and I don't know how to translate this word, Antoni – это церковность. How do you translate церковность?
It is the epitome of churchness.
Epitome. Yes, churchness. He was rooted in church, in the history of the church, in the fathers, although, and this is very important, his inner dynamics were new to the Russian church, partly new. Because already the work was begun with a bit Filaret, more Chomyakov, Alexei Stepanovich, and the Optina fathers, who started to edit the fathers, and the brothers Kireyevsky, who were in this edition. So the beginning of overcoming scholastic, Catholic, and half Protestant argumentation was already implemented, but not yet finished. So he, Metropolitan Anthony, was the motor of changing the inner atmosphere of the Russian church in this respect, and in some other respects too. Therefore, when his mentor, who liked him in the Moscow Theological Academy, Vladyka Leontyi, died, and another metropolitan came who disliked this newness, this new flavor of theology and the way of contacting with the students, who wanted a more strict and, as he has learned himself, yes, an atmosphere. He kicked him out from Moscow to Kazan. And Kazan was a new experience for Vladyka, but nevertheless he produced the same atmosphere there. Now I'll have to take 1 minute because I don't know it by heart, and I couldn't print it today in the morning. So I look it up, what the fruits of the work of Vladyka Antoni were in those times. I must mention that Vasily Maksimenko, the future Archbishop Vitaly Maksimenko, for America, he is very important, had a good contact with Vladyka Antoni in Kazan. Vladyka Antoni has borne him into monkhood?
Monasticism.
Monasticism. When this young man, this Vasily, came, as many young men came to him, with the question, I don't know, shall I marry? Shall I become monk? What shall I do? What's my future? Vladyka Antoni didn't say, be that or be that. He didn't think of him as a staritz, but he sent him to a monastery and spoke with him about confession. So after that, everything was clear. After having been 10 days in this monastery, the future monk Vitaly was tonsured by Vladyka Antoni in 899. And it was Vladyka Antoni who called him to Volyn when Antoni became again in the South, the Volinsky, he called him to Volin, to Pochayev. Everybody knows Pochayev. In 1902, and then we see the way from Pochayev to Ladomirova in Slovakia and to America. This is an important point about him. But when, imagine, when Metropolitan Antoni was 45 years old, I guess he was archbishop then, out of the pool of his scholars and those whom he tonsured, there already were two archbishops, 35 bishops, and uncountable monks who were serving as priests were there. Those who we should know is Patriarch Tichon, is his pupil, Metropolitan Sergei, Metropolitan Evlogiy, and Metropolitan Anastasiy, which shows already the problematic, you know, Evlogiy, the schism, the Paris schism, and so on. Apart from that, you have also, which is at the same time, the Polish Church, Metropolitan Dionysii also. So one could say that Metropolitan Antoni has produced quite a few church problems, personal problems. He didn't cause them, but
the people did.
The people who reacted afterwards in a special way. And the Archbishop Vitali Apollinari, Vladimir Miletti, and many others. When first in Kazan, he was 6 years. In 1989, he tonsured the future Vladika Vitali, but then he was himself, he became vicari, Cheboksara, Chistopol. He was the first vicary then in Kazan and became a bishop, a full-fledged bishop. 1902, as I already mentioned, and he called Vitali to Volin. He became a Volinsky and lived in Zhytomyr, which is where the Pechayev Lavra is. And now you... we return a little bit to his younger, when he was young. He initiated and was fully in this building of a church, Troitsky Sabor, in Pochayev. This Troitsky Sabor is made of Drevli Ruskaya architecture. Architecture is old Russian, very much like the Novgorod-Pskovsky style. Apart from that, he wrote the service, which we all know, and probably read three times a year for Saint Job of Pochayev. It is Job of Pochayev. You know that the canon has an acrostich alphabetically. And today we have one problem, because where there is the Tset Tsari, some people read Pravoslavnye Ludi or Pravoslavnye Christiani because the Tsari is, and so the acrostic is broken. Oh. But with Vladika Antoni, you must not touch the Tsari. But the Tsari, they touched the Russian church, and this was a very important issue for him. Just another point, when he was 14 years old, he wrote the service, which we also read, for Kirill and Method. Yes, Cyril and Methodius. And imagine somebody 14 years old, Antonia Tsarkovnost, writes a service, which later, in 1887, the synod approved of, without changes. They were, yes, as far as I am informed, maybe Vladika will correct me, there was a little proslavlenie for it, brief. This is why we have them in the proskomedie together with Saint Vladimir on another place, you know, later, because they came later into the church, into the practice of the church. Patriarch, old Russia. His ideas about this. He had to do with the old rite, and he was not negative to it. He worked on the Yedinoverie, the integrating the old rite into old ritualists, old believers. And he had a very positive attitude towards Nikon. What did he think about him? And I think it's also important for himself, for Metropolitan Antonio. Nikon wanted to make Russia as a world center of Christian culture, enlightenment, and love to God. Therefore, he saw and he made as zadacha, a goal of his life to overcome the Russian church provincialism. It didn't really work because of the Tsar, the boyars, the state, the politics in those times. It was incredible for me in now some years ago when I found out that Nikon's writings were translated by Palmer in the 70s of the 19th century into English, but they never were published in Russia. The first time Nikon was fully published in Russia was after 2000. Who could say, we know Nikon? Palmer knew him. We didn't. But for Vladika Antoni, who worked also in the archives and who knew French, English, German, Latin, Greek, Hebrew, all doors were open. And imagine, even in this high school, it's a very important point to understand. It was in former times in the Russian theological also schools that the pupils had to write their thesis and to speak in Latin. So Vladika Antoni, in high school, they had to read Caesar and then to tell what they have read freely in Latin. Later, when he comes to Poland as a non-free man, he speaks with the cardinal Latin. You see from this how broad-minded he must have been, and therefore the old ritualists and the overcoming of provincialism was, of course, for him a very important issue. This is one side of it. The other side might be disputed people are thinking about it differently today is the Imya Slavia. In 1912, on the holy mountain Athos, there was a big row, a big problem. And expelling monks from the Athos. It was just before the revolution, when the Athos, the holy mountain, was weakened concerning the Russian monastic life. And, whether right or wrong, Metropolitan Anthony participated in this because he was very strict against the Imya Slavia. Name worship. Yes, the worship. Well, you see, I don't think that we can say this one-sidedly. If you say that the point is that in the name and in the pronouncing of the name of Christ, Jesus Christus, the godness, правильно? The divinity is intrinsic, present as such. In how far this is not according to Grigori Palama, and in how far it might be connected with the teaching of Grigori Palama's teaching about the energies, is open to discussion. But yes, the name, power, the power of the name on the one hand, but on the other hand, a certain flavor of magical understanding, superstition, and, excuse me, perhaps some primitive thinking monks might have spoken about it. It's difficult. Antoni Bulatovich wrote about it, and go ahead and read all the books and then write a thesis about it.
Arguing over it, and it seems to me
all that even today, yes, it's even today, it's an open issue open to discussion, and I'm not qualified to decide about these things. But I already mentioned that Metropolitan Antony was very critical about the system of the state towards the church. It's hard what he's reading and what he's writing about Oberprokurore, who have more power than any patriarch ever had, and that we become Lutherans through that, and that this is, according to Konstantin Pobedonostsev, who shocked the Tsar with it, he wrote him a letter which was published later, that the patriarch would be dangerous for the autocratic power. This was unacceptable for Metropolitan Antony, of course. So he was also critical a little bit. He was a monarchist, very loyal, but also critical, because loyal, but more loyal to the church, of course. And he would like to have a Tsar who would have seen that better. Of course, the Tsar was in 1903 open to having the council, the all-Russian council. But then, 1905, I think, Konstantin Pobedonostsev wrote this letter. And when Sabler, the new Oberprokuror, gave the Tsar the idea that now Metropolitan Antony, still Archbishop Antony, could become the Metropolitan of St. Petersburg, the Tsar said no. And so he was a member of Synod, but he remained Volinsky. He participated also in the Predsoborne Prisutstvie 1906, and 1912 and 13 he was in the commissions of the preparing of the council.
shortly before World War I, he became the Archbishop of Kharkov, which is a little bit to the east of the Ukraine, and of course higher than Volyn. And then World War, February Revolution. And you all know what then followed. But before the council opened in August 1917, Vladyka Antoni was expelled by the provisorial government to Valaam. It's a very nice place, like here. So Vladyka Antoni, not having the fathers or any theological library from his head, wrote, so to say, main a text of great importance about the dogma of redemption, the dogma of redemption, which is being discussed. We'll come back to this discussion in soteriology. It's an important point for me, which I would like to speak about at the end of this lecture. But when the All-Russian Council opened, then Vladyka Antoni was called, and he was also elected in Kharkov, because elections of bishops started. All became Democrats, so the bishops were elected, and Metropolitan Antoni was again in Kharkov as a Kharkov bishop. But then when the Bolsheviks were shooting Kremlin, when with cannons they broke the cupola of the Uspensky Cathedral, which is in the center, it's historical and so on, the discussion about patriarch, about installing a patriarch in Russia, moved quickly. However, not that quick as we might think. It was 2 weeks that these things were discussed. It was one of the one of the disciples of Metropolitan Antoni is Ilarion Troitsky. His relics are now in the Sretensky monastery in Moscow. He spoke about this at the end of the discussion broadly, and this was also very important. At the beginning of the discussion, of course, Metropolitan Antoni spoke about it, and he was all the way insisting on the necessity of installing a patriarch in Russia. Since 1906, he was always talking about it, and before that, as I already mentioned, with his students, as later Patriarch Tikhon remembered. It was his initiative that the Patriarch of Antioch, Grigory IV, came to the festivities of 300 years of the family of Romanov. It was his initiative to bring to this festivities also the Pochayev icon, which was, because of World War I, in Zhytomyr in those times when he was Zhytomyrsky and Volynsky. So he had these possibilities, and he was positive towards the Tsar. We should not think, after what I have told, that there was some overdue negativity. However, the patriarch should have been elected, and he was elected only after the October Revolution began.
you probably are all informed how it worked. Metropolitan Antony got the absolute majority of the votes immediately in the first round. And then later the others, but there were three candidates and the lot which should be taken and was taken from the
from the font
of the icon Vladimirskaya in the cathedral, which was destroyed and now is again in Moscow, of this Christ the Savior. And the lot fell to Tikhon. Of course, we think that this is providential because Vladyka Antony was known by lots of high-ranking Orthodox hierarchs outside Russia, and he was the best one to preserve the Russian church dispersed and in the whole world. So he was sent, so to say, from God to make this job, which perhaps he might not have understood in the first moment. Then, in January, end of January 1918, Vladimir Bogoyavlensky, the only hierarch in the history of the Russian Church who was successively the hierarch of Moscow, of St. Petersburg, and of Kiev. These are the three capitals of Russian history. He's the only hierarch who had all these cathedrals. He was killed. And the council, this... the council decided that every year we have to remember this date, the Sunday nearest to this date, the new martyrs. This was the first step towards revering these new martyrs. And after that, Metropolitan Antony was elected Kievsky and Galitsky, which is the West Ukraine, producing so many problems today. And he had this title until his reposal. It is very impressive if you read the questioning, interrogations of Peter Polyansky, Metropolitan Peter Polyansky, who became after Tikhon the locum tenens. For 6 hours on end, they interrogate him, forcing him to, you must take this title from Antony. And Peter said, I cannot take it. It has been given to him by the council, and only a free council could make it. It's very, very impressive how he discarded this possibility. It's important for us, because later, Metropolitan Sergei, also disciple of Metropolitan Antony, went the other way, as we all know. Now in Ukraine, started something which is a little bit like now. In those times, we had three parts of the church: the conservatives, those who said
an autonomous Ukrainian church would be all right, and Tikhon was with it, and the autocephalists, that's where they come from, after the revolution. Vladyka Antoni refused, of course, the autocephaly, but the autonomy, which is now the practice, developed from that. However, in those times, with the Bolsheviks, with the Brest-Litovsk treaty, the Germans entered into the Ukraine, which influenced later the civil war. So they were in Kiev, and they installed Hetman Skoropadsky, with whom Mitropolit Antoni first had... Skoropadsky didn't want him. He preferred the autocephalists, but later it worked out better. But then another nationalist, Petlura, came, and Metropolitan Antoni, together with Archbishop Yevlogi, were arrested and sent to, factually, to Poland. They were in a monastery of the Basilians there. Жарковато, да? Никуда не денешься. Прогреваюсь. What is interesting, Metropolitan Yevlogi, in those times, I think he was Archbishop, he was quite depressed, while Metropolitan Antony was always in a good mood, as some monks who came later saw of this. And he wrote the dictionary of a good understanding of Dostoevsky, whom he loved from childhood. And there he wrote this Opat Katechizisa, Pravoslavnogo Katechizisa. It's a editing a new edition of the Philaret Catechism, which everybody knows in Russia, new in those time in Russia. The point was again to remove. The scholastic satisfactionary, the theory of satisfaction in soteriology. This is being discussed also very hardly, and if God will, we will speak about it a little bit later. When, after 5.5 months, these two were freed from arrest, they came back to Kiev. They wanted to see Denikin. The French have helped in that. And Metropolit Antoni met Denikin. It's the Whites. When they had just the possibility, it was near 400 kilometers of Moscow. A little bit, and Russia would be free. But he was there in different cities. Even a council and a Vyshe Tserkovnoye Upravleniye, the highest church administration, was organized. Later, Patriarch Tikhon accepted the decisions this administration has taken. And this administration lived later under, he was the head, Metropolitan Antoni was the head of it, in Ekaterinodar. Then they fled from Novorossiysk with a... It's an interesting story. I cut it short. how they fled, because Metropolitan Antoni said, I don't leave. The Bolsheviks are coming. He said, what shall I... Where should I die? Here or somewhere else? No, doesn't matter. So they tricked him. He said... Constantinople is taken by the Greeks, and there will be a service in St. Sophia. And on the Greek ship, we have to make a molebin for that. And Metropolitan Antoni went to have this molebin, to serve the molebin. While his Fedia, the cleric, cell attendant packed the suitcases and ran on the ship the other way. And then they drank coffee and gliko, and the Greeks talking, as Greeks always do. So they had their time, and Metropolitan Antonio said, "And when does the service begin?" And suddenly the ship left. That was the way of leaving Russia. And then he was in Constantinople. He was on the Holy Mountain, where he later wanted to stay, because he didn't have the idea of becoming first hierarch of Russia, Russian church abroad. However, Wrangel, who was in Crimea, called him to be the chief of the highest administration, church administration of South Russia, until he came there in the beginning of September, until the end of November. And in November, the evacuation began. And those bishops who were on the ship, they decided that they will continue, because 150,000 Russians came to Constantinople, where the patriarch had 30,000 Greek believers. So the Constantinople patriarchy gave us the right to speak for and to work on the ministry to those fled immigrants. Soon after that, the Serbian church became united, and Patriarch Dimitri invited Vladika with the synod to Sremski Karlovci. And a disciple of Vladika Antoni later became a patriarch. It was Patriarch Varnava, who held his hand over the Russian church abroad, which had lots of problems. As I said, this hierarch, Metropolitan Antoni, was sent by the Lord to, with the help of the Mother of God, to keep us together with Kurskaya. So Metropolitan Antoni was an angel of our church. First, the Karlovitsky Sabor, the Council of Karlovtsi, very much influenced by the monarchists. And Vladika Antoni writes to a conference, Genueska Conferencia, Genova. The conference sort of now United Nations, parallel. And what does he write? He insists that against the barbars, we need to fight with arms. He thinks of Germagian. And Alexander Nevsky fought, and Dmitry Donskoy fought, and Germagian called to fight against these heretics, Polish heretics. It's in the ways of Russian history, this possibility. Metropolitan Antoni was not a pacifist. He was dedicated to polemize against Tolstoy and the Tolstoyans. So he wrote this text, and in this text was said, we pray, we should, all of us should pray for the restoration of the monarchy under the leadership of the Roman, the family of the Romanovs, which was distorted, of course, by the communists and used against Patriarch Tikhon and the Russian church. Whereafter, in 1922, he Patriarch Tikhon was arrested, but you can read today the letter of Trotsky. I think it's there are 14 points of how to bring the schism to the Russian church, and via the loyal priests. These are the renovationists. Aha. The renovationists came, and they received from the communists half of the churches in Russia. But these churches were pretty empty. Patriarch Tikhon spent more than a year in arrest and in the end in prison. And he came out having written what they demanded from him, the communists demanded from him, that he is not, he was wrong, he was a monarchist, he was a reactionary, and now he isn't anymore of, an enemy of the Soviet power. Later, when they asked him, he said, I wrote that I am not an enemy, but I didn't write that I am a friend. Metropolitan Antony wrote an article that the ink of this renouncel didn't spoil the heart, didn't spill the heart, spoil the heart of Patriarch Tikhon. But it was then later differently his position when Metropolitan Sergei wrote his declaration of loyalty. Then the Russian church abroad said, now our ways are different. But before 1927, in 1925, it's interesting to mention this, Christianity, and especially the Anglicans in the instituted days, had the festivities of Nicaea. It was 1,600 years of Nicaea. They invited Metropolitan Antony. He came, and he said, it's not church. We can speak not about unification of churches, but I can speak about the Christians, the Christian culture and the Christian confessions outside the church. So this position is today also important. Coming to an end of this historical part, in the years 1933 and 34, Metropolitan Sergei, who resisted a bit, but later was forced to demand from Patriarch Varnava to throw out the hierarchs of the Russian church abroad. Varnava didn't respond to that. And Sergei put interdicted Vladika Antony and the others. And at the same time, there was an interdict also against Kirill of Kazan, who was in Russia. This is soon after that, a blind Vladika Antony said his last sermon and died a week after having said this sermon with many tears, remembering what in Russia the believers lived with. On the whole, he was also polemist. He wrote against this French guy who wrote about Jesus Christ, Ernest Renan, against Tolstoy and Vladimir Solovyov and quite a few others. But what was the idea behind that? He was a public person. He understood what publicity means. He thought that pastorally, a pastor has a responsibility to react to the ideas of his time. And he worked on these ideas of those times. For us, they are still interesting. It's not something which is at the end of the 19th century. Today we still have this, spirit, Zeitgeist, the spirit of the Western way of thinking. And Antoni, Metropolitan Antoni, can help us to deeper understand it. He was against this Herbert Spencer, probably you know this name, with his progressive thinking, the progressist understanding of development of human culture and so on. Vladyka Antoni thought about ethical and moral and spiritual deep understanding against that. And he saw history quite differently. He knew the apocalypse. He said, we didn't receive from our Lord a progressive way of thinking. We are not pessimists. We must work on our hearts. We must work with our believers. But insisting on the human race developing is awful, as well as against social Darwinism, for instance, which produced Hitler and World War II. He polemicizes against all these wrong ideas, against these fallacies of our times as well. Even the Human Rights Declaration, if it's correctly understood, it's all right. But if it's progressively understood, it's a horrible hypocrisy. At the same time, bombing and so on. Now, his ideas about pastoral activity, already mentioned.
Сколько времени?
Закончу. Нет, ну, я все-таки хочу закончить.
Да.
Надо зонтичек поставить. You're all already very tired. When the last one falls asleep, I'll stop. Ten years ago, I had a lecture in Jordanville about the soteriology of Vladyka Antoni. And I rewrote some thesis which I wrote in Belgrade in 1991. So it is published in Russian in the Zbornik, in this book about Vladyka Antoni 2006. It was published 2010. So if somebody is interested in the details of what I will just mention, please have a look at that. And at some of the footnotes, because you know the best things are always written with small letters. Well, this is the daughter of a lawyer was married by a certain young man, and another one came to this lawyer and said, well, how could he marry her? And the lawyer said, he didn't read what is written with the little book, with the little letters. Only very shortly, pastorstvo, pastoral theology of Vladyka Antoni is rooted in a word which we should take very seriously. Usvojenie. Usvojenie, it is English, I've looked it up in the dictionary, might be said as adoption, which I don't like because maybe adopt somebody is something else. Internalization. So I would say it's adoption with internalization and acquirement and, in a sense, assimilation.
Acquisition. Appropriation,
probably? Appropriation and acquisition and everything of it. But it's deeper, it's spiritual, usvojenie, making it to one's, bringing him to oneself. This is rooted in his, not only in his heart, of course, in the first place, in his heart, but philosophically, in his doctoral thesis, magister thesis first, and this his thesis, what is it about? I tried to translate it, psychological data in favor of the freedom of the will and ethic responsibility and moral responsibility. Psychological data in favor of the freedom of will. We should think about Maximus Confessor. Will. In Christ there are two wills. One human, one divine. Я многому научусь сегодня. Vladyka demands from us, from the pastors, we should have a good knowledge of the church teaching, but not as a formal teaching, but the church teaching as healing. And this is also in his soteriology. It's not economical and juridical, but it's healing. The second point is to the good knowledge of man, of human soul, which is in the fight between good and bad. You have to have this fight in your own heart. You have to see it and to know it, and then you can see the other and make this usvojenie, which is done by the third point, which is important for us, compassionate love. This compassionate love as an idea, together with usvojenie, is that big with him all his life. On one hand, the compassionate love to the students and to everybody who comes to confession. And on the other hand, when he writes about it, some people say it's impossible to speak about it like this. So polemics begin. The fourth point is, at best, what I have said recently, knowledge of the aberrations and fallacies, delusions and misbeliefs, or in Arabic, al-dalala, of his time, of his, of those who come to him, to the pastor. You must know, for instance, Buddhism. In those times, it was not that actual. However, Theosophy, Blavatskaya, and Rerichi, and all these Mahatmas. It's a good thing for the pastor to know what the other one with his wrong ideas is thinking about. While the second, the knowledge of man in his fight for the good against the bad, the evil, and the fourth, knowing about the illusions of your time. The first and the third, knowledge about church teaching, healing, and the compassionate love is the basis of it, of pastoral work. Because also, in his thesis, it's very interesting, philosophically worked out, that the wrong dynamics which a person has, his interest, if it's distorted, he will think in fallacy. He will see facts fallaciously and put them together in a wrong way. Therefore, fighting against passions is the most important thing. And Vladyka Antoni always showed he even wrote about, as a pastor, John of Kronstadt. Or he always mentions Staritz, Amvrosi, and the Optina Starci, all these good pastors. And he discusses not their secret, but their mystery of entering into the soul of the other person. Not only into those who are already prepared to repent, who are already a little bit open to this influence, but even more to those who are still in fallacy and still against it. The Starci, also Saint Seraphim, towards the sinner he was more open, even more. And this he underlines, Metropolitan Antoni underlines this, that this is not something human, something simply psychological, but this is given by God to overcome the distinction between individuals and entering into the sphere where my personal I is, as we heard yesterday, being unique, sees the other as a same unique I, and at the same time as you, and I am you for him. His thesis is working this out on the basis of lots of thinkers, German thinkers, foremostly, and French, on the freedom of will. And it's an interesting philosophical work which he did when he was 22 and 24 in those times. It's still very interesting. It was published five editions in those times, so maybe worthwhile studying. Now we come to a close. The last part is, before you are really through, how does Christ save us? After having read a little bit of Vladyka Antoni, I was motivated to read Anselm of Canterbury. And thanks God, there is a book in Latin, at the same time translated in German. I have learned Latin in school, but it's not enough to just read Latin as did Vladyka Antoni. And I looked, isn't there somewhere with Anselm of Canterbury, who created the theory of satisfaction? Is there any point where you can go deeper than just the feudalistic axiom? If somebody offends somebody else. He has to pay satisfaction for it. This is an axiom which is accepted, was accepted at those times. All the rest is logic. But this first step is illogical. God is not forced to fulfill feudalistic ideals. For Vladyka Antoni, who installed a group sort of working on these themes, Metropolitan Sergei wrote about this also, his thesis, and Vladyka Antoni was the censor of the publishing his thesis. What is important is that salvation has two sides. Usually they discern the subjective side and the objective side of salvation. Sort of what Christ did is objective, and what I'm doing for my salvation to accept Christ's salvation is my side, is subjective. And some of the critics of Vladyka Antoni, they didn't read his thesis before, don't see that for Vladyka Antoni, the main point is that in the concept of I, subjective and objective side are united and overcome. This division is not the end of the development of thought or of the reality behind it. So in my person, I have the whole world. It's not subjectivism, but it's also not objectivism. And this for salvation. How? Now, the question was, how does Christ overcome the division between God and man? According to Anselm of Canterbury, after Adam offending God, man has to pay. But what does man have in order to pay God for offending him? Everything we have from the Lord, from God. So we have nothing to pay. And even if we would die thousands of times, and even if we would suffer for eternity, we are not eternal. Eternity is granted to us by God. We can do nothing. Cur Deus homo? Why God became man? In order that a person who is as valuable as God himself, the value of the Son of God is the same as the value of God. This person who is as valuable can do it. Therefore, the Son of God had to become man. The funny thing about it is that Anselm himself writes in the introduction that he wants to show why God became man purely on the basis of logic. So he was the first rationalist in the West. And he writes it. In Latin it's called Remoto Christo. It means putting aside Christ. Imagine, Gregory the theologian would write something and say in the introduction, I want to remove Christ. And then I start thinking. I think, and I'm sure, all the fathers, they said what Paul is also has said. We have the nous of Christ. The mind of Christ. I think it's in the 2 Corinthians. That's what we want. And when I think about salvation, I think via Christ. If Christ is thinking in me, I am going deeper into salvation. I cannot kick out Christ and then talk about salvation. However, if you think about it, it's for the psychology of Western thought, it's characteristic. This break was characteristic. The Pope, the Bavarian Pope, Benedict, wrote against satisfaction. This was a great problem for the Catholic Church, the satisfaction. Lots of people fled the Catholic Church and flee today because still these ideas are existent. But then, after having said how cruel satisfaction might sound, he starts to bring it back in a modified way.
Benedict.
Recently. So the problem remains. And Metropolitan Antoni has the solution for that. On the other hand, there were resistance because I know at least three formulations which he has done which are not totally perfect. For instance, in his article about the Trinity, he writes, I quote from my head, he writes, "And now here the Trinity can help us." He thinks about the concept of Trinity helping us, but it sounds strange. In the main point in his Dogma of Redemption, which was criticized horribly by Archbishop Serafim Boguchary, Archbishop Serafim Sobolev, who wrote a book against Vladyka Antoni, you can read it, where he writes about the Christoborческая ересь, against, that is a heresy against the cross. Imagine Metropolitan Antoni, as I told you about him, this church man, is against the cross. He must have been blind spiritually. It's not the truth. It's not the truth. But it's strange to read these things. For instance, why? The formula was Christ in Gethsemane, in the Garden Gethsemane, did not fear for his own life. He was not a coward. Even the Maccabeans didn't fear for their lives just because some pig meat. We have many martyrs. What is it all about? Lots of people with whom you will speak as pastors think that, it's comforting. I fear death, and Christ fears death. So he is at my side. I'm a coward, he's a coward, we're together. It's primitive. I read Protestant texts in this direction, canonical. This idea is wrong, and Vladyka Antoni turns it round. Not because not knowing his future, Christ says, let this chalice pass by, or better, take it, paraferi, take it away, take this chalice away. If it's possible. If it's not possible, I'll drink it. And Luca, the Gospel of Luke says, and Luke was a surgeon,
doctor,
a doctor. The blood is wet, you remember. Luke says, and in agony, he was praying deeper, more intensively. What does Christ do? He does not, he is not agnoic. He sees, this is what Metropolitan Antony writes, and this is an ingenious idea, as God's Son, knowing all, he enters into seeing the whole horror and the whole death of sin, what sin produces in the world. It's a cosmic, the cosmic evil. And in his human dimension, he bears it. He takes it on him, praying against the evil with love. So his love is overcoming the evil of the whole world consciously, for the consciousness of human, of a human. Christ is human. Where's the fallacy of Vladika Seraphim? Quite often he argues that way. Vladika Antony says A. From A must follow B. And then C follows, and C is wrong and impossible. But you can't argue this way. Because if from A stems B, and you are wrong in utverzhdaya eto, in asserting, yes, in asserting this first step, you might be wrong. If you are wrong, then everything you write further is wrong also. And this is exactly what happens. The main point is that he says, Vladika discarded the cross. He moved redemption from Golgotha to Gethsemane. And that's wrong. We have lots of texts where the cross is so important. The cross is the center of all. And he moves the center away. He's discarding the cross. Impossible. Why? Because Vladika says, after describing what Christ in his prayer is working on, if I might say so, he says, "В этом-то и состояло наше спасение." In this, our salvation was accomplished. Well, outwardly, it sounds like that. But if you enter into the way of thinking of Vladika Antony, and Vladika Antony would just smile, you know, about the argumentation. Contrary, you can't divide Christ in two moments. The moment of crucifixion. Which moment of crucifixion? Stradanie? Suffering? The suffering before? Or the moment of death? Or when he says, my God, why did you leave me? Which is the psalm, which is a prayer. Where is the moment when we are saved? For Vladika Antony, there is no such moment. From the beginning, perhaps, of man as such, in the Bible, Christ, the Logos, is already on the way saving human race. Later, he, in Annunciation, he is already sort of born. And the whole question of putting him into time might better be looked at from the point of view of eternity. We can find such ideas in the Fathers, and they are not quoted by the polemists.
Polemicists.
Okay. For instance, also Gregory the theologian about Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 15. But perhaps for discussion. If you see that Vladyka Antoni had in mind the tears about Lazarus, which are not just tears because Lazarus died. Maybe it's tears for those who are unbelievers. He took our illness, quotation from Isaiah. All these points should be seen together in the great person of the Son of God. And his compassionate love, which is saving us, is working into every sinner. It's penetrating the life of every man. So Christ is open to everyone. And Vladyka Antoni quotes the rules of Basil the Great, saying that the monks, they want to live a life in which the division of the nature of man is being overcome. The polemicists take the nature as something abstract. Nature is the sum of qualities. The nature of God, take all the qualities of God, and you have nature. This abstract concept, Vladyka Antoni does not accept, and he is in this point together with Maximus Confessor, who worked on the wills, the two wills. He writes that nature is not something abstract, but nature is dynamics. It's also действi, also action. Nature is not out of action. It includes dynamics. And the dynamics of salvation, we see, is overcoming all what through sin is dividing us, putting us one against the other. Doing that, Christ saved us, and we can come to the liturgy when we break the lamb. He is being divided, no undivided, but those who partake come into communion. Therefore, Christ is as well in the center of the discus, as well as in the end of the liturgy, taking the whole church, embracing the whole church, but at the same time being the center and penetrating all. Those who we commemorate, beginning with the Mother of God, through the saints and the non-saints. And as the last, if the priest doesn't forget, he should take one out for himself. And dividing Christ is not possible. Christ penetrating us is not only possible, this is the reality of salvation and the reality of resurrection. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this special podcast edition of the Pastoral Resources Program of the Eastern American Diocese. Please visit us on the web at www.eadiocese.org. Thank you, and God bless you.